Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. I am talking to you in what I believe is my second, maybe third week at home for the year of 2026.
You've only been home for a very short period of time.
And you would think that I don't like my home. I do like my home, but boy, have we been busy.
Yes.
But before I go off on a tangent, I should say that this is the podcast for June 2026, episode number 254. And as always, we will have a web page that corresponds to what we're going to talk to you about that
which
you
is going to be
at.
Very important this month.
Why?
Because we have lots of pictures to share.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Pictures are part of our
our discussion this month is going to be some
photography comments.
Yes, photography comments, courtesy of a friend of ours. Anyway, we are very glad that you joined us. And, of course, we always want to hear from you after you visit the website and look at the pictures. You will find you'll probably have some questions. But, you know, I titled this episode, Eating Gold.
And one might think that that's a metaphor, but yes. In actuality, we really did do that, as well as eating a lot of other weird stuff while we were still in Japan.
Japan has a lot of weird stuff. We watched our guide pick up his breakfast, and he had 9 bowls and plates on his breakfast tray.
And our guide,
and he was thin.
And our guide easily weighed half of either one of them.
For most meals, you have all of these little syrups and
packets of things. Really tried to get it into it, but
yes.
We never quite understood what they all were or why he had them or how they tasted.
And the fermented soybeans that came in a little capsule
packets.
Thing.
That's amazing to me. In these days of trying to not eat things that come out of plastic, the Japanese just wrap everything. I think if you bought a bag of cookies, each cookie inside the bag would be wrapped up in its own individual container.
We did buy a Kit Kat.
To take the plastic off
every
the cookie,
little
which
bite.
Which might slow you down from eating too many cookies.
Uh-huh.
So that could be a
so
good thing.
So that's the strategy,
but boy, you'd go to the grocery store and you would see a carrot for sale. One carrot wrapped in plastic next to one cucumber wrapped in
next
plastic.
Next to one ear of corn
wrapped in plastic.
You know, we're just talking about some of the differences that we noted. We actually had a great time in Japan, and it is a wonderful tourism country full of interesting things and nothing scary, really, I don't think, unless you are scared of strange-looking food, like gold.
Yes. And so, where did you eat your gold?
Well, one day, as we said, this trip was very heavy on cultural things. We didn't do a lot of tourism, although, frankly, we did get to see Mount Fuji, but we didn't do a lot of tourism things. We did cultural things. So we did, as we mentioned last time, home visit. We did the samurai swords. We did drumming. We did kabuki. We did many, many things. We made our own miso soup. We did sushi.
We did it the right way. Did we talk about this already, that the sushi in Japan bears little resemblance to the sushi that I see for sale in the grocery store? Many more choices, many more shapes, sizes, wraps.
And it's a wide variety of fish. So basically, sushi is an 18-gram piece of rice, a ball of rice.
Sticky rice.
That you form into a oblong.
Kind of a handful.
And then put on a raw piece of fish. Might be salmon or
whatever.
Whatever, right.
They eat it all. Raw.
Or roe. And why is it 18 grams?
Because that's what our sushi chef told us that we had to do.
Why did he say that?
I don't remember why.
Because it's one bite.
One handful.
And you take the sushi, you put it often in your hands, not using chopsticks, and you just pop it in your mouth.
Yeah.
And they found that the 19 grams or 18 grams of rice is the perfect amount for a bite.
I thought that was a little large for my mouth.
Anyway,
but anyway.
we learned a lot.
So one of the places they took us was to a factory that specializes in making gold leaf. Think of aluminum foil, only much thinner, and it's really made out of gold. And basically the process is to hammer it to as thin as possible. We saw a lot of this gold when we were in Thailand, because a lot of the people who come to temples to worship the Buddha bring or buy a piece of gold leaf and fasten it to his statue so that after a while the Buddha looks like he's peeling from a bad sunburn. But this factory made the gold leaf. The Japanese don't do that as much as the Thai from what we saw.
Well, they don't, for religious purposes. But gold leaf is used around the world for coating things and making them look gold. And, of course, you want the thinnest possible amount of gold because gold is so expensive. And so this isn't a factory like you see with smokestacks and machines and things. This is a
craftsman.
And they make the gold leaf that is so fine. It's finer than tissue paper. It's so thin that you could almost see through it, but it just will disintegrate if you just blow on it. So it's extremely hard to make. Because to get it that thin
and hard to handle,
and then to handle it after that is very critical.
And they told us, although I'm not sure I believe it, that we were going to be eating a special gold leaf that is edible. I don't know why they aren't. That they put on ice cream cones.
This was food grade gold, and it had been handled in a special way to keep it sterile.
Hygienic,
or keep it clean.
I guess.
Yeah. Because the other one they don't care about. And so.
Did it taste like anything?
No.
Did you get any kind of mouthfeel No. Did you start wondering where is it going to end up at the other end? Don't think about that too hard.
Because gold is inert. So this was obviously just a tourist attraction. But at the place where they make the gold leaf, and I don't remember how many sheets they get out of an ounce, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
So it's very, very thin. And they have ice cream cones. And if you take a look at the webpage today, you'll see a picture of this. But they take a soft serve ice cream cone. They extrude it from the machine. And then the girl takes a sheet of gold.
And kind of lays it on top.
So that it conforms
to the soft serve shape.
And then you eat it as normal. And frankly,
and this wasn't just sold at the factory, but it was sold in the general area of where we went to do that. There were other places you could buy it too, but not all over Japan. It was regional specialty.
So that adds a little bit of price to the ice cream cone. So just it goes from $1.50 to $12.
Where else can you eat gold?
I
want to say something else about Japan. For those of you who are hesitant, Japan after World War II, when we dropped those bombs on them and they were just so destroyed, decided to go a different way, and that way was to follow the United States. So in many ways, the way they live, the way their government works, their values, is quite easy for us to feel comfortable with and understand because they very much honored us and tried to emulate us. Is that the right word? However, that is about as thin as the gold leaf that was laid over the ice cream, because the Japanese have retained a rich and wonderful culture and belief system that's been there for, thousands of years, 2,000 years?
Yeah.
And they really haven't given up on that at all. So you have this nice blend of things that are very comfortable and familiar with things that are very exotic and understandable at times. So you would feel very comfortable there. I think you would. And these days, the value of the dollar compared to the yen is quite comfortable. So we found the prices of things to
be reasonable for a big city
for us as a tourist.
Yeah. So our tour included a few stops. We started in Tokyo and then went to Hakone and then to Kawazawa. And then on to Kyoto. And that's where it ended. I think we kind of ended up on the last podcast when we were leaving.
Just finishing up
Kyoto. And from Kyoto, we took the Shinkansen. And the Shinkansen is the Japanese name for the bullet train, or we call it the bullet train. And we had we made a reservation because we were going back to Tokyo. The trip actually ended in Kyoto, and the rest of the group were flying back to the United States from there. But we decided that we were going to take a cruise back to the United States. Why go through all those time zones all at once when you can take 3 weeks to take those time zones and go back to some of the places that we enjoy in Alaska?
And come back in moderately good condition.
Yeah, well, even jet lag is just tough
no matter how you do it.
We took the Shinkansen, and we did a fair amount of research. It cost us to go from Tokyo to Kyoto was about 2.5 hours on the train going at 200 miles an hour. So that was pretty fast. And we were a little nervous about this because we had our luggage and everything. But one of the good things about the Shinkansen and the trains in general is that there's no steps to get into the train. You know, in Europe, you have to go up a bunch of steps to get into the car, but here you just roll right from the platform right on into the entrance to the train.
And since we have been there last, they had a lot more English signage. So my apprehension to a large degree was from our last visit there, which was already a long time ago, where we often couldn't read anything when we would get on a train or in a subway. And that's kind of terrifying because these stations are big. As you don't want to be on a 200-mile-an-hour train and get off at the wrong stop and have to go 120 miles back to get to where you want to go. But this time, everything was marked well enough.
Yes. We were there during Golden Week, which is one of the busiest travel seasons of the whole year for the Japanese, and we were a little nervous about that. We made reservations on our train, and we had to make a special reservation because we had oversized luggage, which we don't really have. We had our usual suitcase with us and a carry-on, but they said, you can't have anything bigger than this and this and this size, and ours was somewhat bigger than that. And the Shinkansen is not made with extra luggage in mind. So we bought seats that had oversized luggage space
around us.
And then, of course, we had reserved seats to go with that. So we were a little nervous. We got to the station an hour and a half early because we were afraid of not knowing where to go and all that sort of good stuff. But they have a very well organized. You go through, and it was all paperless tickets, and we go through, and it has a car number and seat number and train number, of course, and you go stand there, and boy, that train stops within 6 inches of where the markers are. And if you're in, if you know what car you're in, you just walk in, and there our seats were.
And everything happens very quickly, so if you do get on the wrong car, you have some worrying to do once again because the train takes off 2 minutes after it pulls into the station.
That's right. The Shinkansen runs on time all the time. And going between Kyoto and Tokyo probably was a fairly heavily traveled route. But there was a train about every 6 or 8 minutes.
And it was a holiday weekend, so maybe there were a few more on. But still,
we had a huge selection of trains, and the train was fairly full.
I think one thing we understand better now is that the Japanese are even more hesitant to take a vacation than Americans are. And so they very rarely take more than a day or two off, except for Golden Week, which is kind of a combination of a few days off that they bunched together, like we do when Thanksgiving or New Year's Eve and those kind of holidays are well placed in the week. We just make it into a whole week of holiday. So typically a Japanese person who is traveling or taking a little holiday has what I would call an overnight bag, which means that they fit well on the Shinkansen and means that they also fit well in the tiny little hotel rooms that we have already complained about because they don't lug around all this stuff like we do. And they
they're not
gone
for that long.
Space.
Right, exactly.
Right. So I understood that better now.
But because we were there for 6 weeks, we had a little bit of extra luggage. And, of course, we have to have a little bit of technology. Oh, making the podcast this month is much easier than last month.
Because you're at home.
and I have my
regular equipment,
and I have internet. We were very surprised that I had so much trouble after recording. It was my fault, but uploading it was a major hassle because they don't allow FTP in a lot of places, which was a big problem. Anyway, so we got to Tokyo without any problem. We got a taxi. It took us to the hotel. And then the next day we got on our ship, which was an Oceania. We haven't sailed on Oceania
before. They really were not on my radar at all. No. I'm glad you found them.
Right. And Oceania is kind of a premier or upper level echelon cruise line, but not in the elite category. You know, there are categories of cruise lines. You have the kind of the mainstream, NCL, RCL, Princess, Costa, and a bunch of others that are pretty much family-oriented and mainstream. And then you have the upper echelon, the Regents and the
Silver Seas and the Seabourns
and Windstar. And those are premium lines. And then you have a few in the middle, like Viking and Oceania. And Oceania was not on our list, but they have 10 ships, which is a decent number. They're part of the NCL corporate group, so that they have a decent amount of backing. And we decided to sail on the Riviera because it sailed between Tokyo and Seattle over 20 days, doing several ports in Japan and then 5 ports in Alaska.
And a lot of at-sea sailing in the middle.
It was, of course, being a repositioning so that it could do its Alaska itineraries starting now and then for the next coming summer. So these repositioning cruises offer you interesting itineraries and lower prices and plenty of time at sea if that's of interest to you.
So our trip was medium-sized, 1,200
passengers.
And I kind of wondered what its strength would be. And
yes,
I would say its strength, besides the wonderful food, which they advertise as the best eating at sea, was that it was a good compromise between little ships and the advantages that they have and the big ships.
And we should mention that Oceania ships are between about 600, half their ships are about 600, and half are about 1,200 passengers. So they are of moderate-sized ships in the Holland America sort of category. Oh, I forgot to mention Holland. The closest ship line that I would say to Oceania would be Holland.
And there were no people under 18, 14?
Passengers under 18.
So it's not a family cruise.
It's not a family cruise at all. So if you are interested in family cruising, don't check Oceania because you won't be allowed. But they do have a all-inclusive policy, which is something we've really come to appreciate. All-inclusive means that it has gratuities, Wi-Fi, drinks to a certain extent included in the fare. That is nice because you get on and there's no nickel and diming you. You can have all the coffees and the drinks and water and things that you want. And you get Wi-Fi, so that's nice too. But we, of course, have some caveats about that. But as a ship, it was very nice.
And our ship was relatively old but immaculately kept. Obviously had been refurbished along the way and was didn't feel old to me at all.
And, of course, they do talk about their fine cuisine. And we were very pleased with that aspect of it because most ships have – I was just looking at Princess the other day, and Princess's upscale dining experiences
– specialty restaurants.
Specialty restaurants cost $55 per person.
Over and above the fare that you've already
exactly
paid to be fed while you are on
that
cruise.
And, of course, you don't have to take advantage of that because the buffet as well as the main dining room are always available to you. But you always wonder, are the specialty restaurants worth it?
What am I missing?
What am I
FOMO
missing? And this ship, for a 1,200-passenger ship, it had 4 very nice specialty restaurants, and they were all included in the fare. There was no charge.
Their cuisine was clearly identified by their names on the door. Jacques was the French restaurant, and so on. It was an Italian restaurant. There was a...
The Asian fusion.
Asian fusion restaurant. There was a meat-oriented American-style type restaurant. And their menus were very different from the regular dining room and very different from one another.
And they each had their own kitchen, so they really had specialty items on the menu.
And we were able to eat in each one of them one time, guaranteed.
That's guaranteed.
And then if there was space, we were able to eat in them a lot more. And so we did.
Which was very nice. We met on this cruise some podcast listeners from Australia, Sue and Al, and this was, as we mentioned, I think last month, that this was a very much of a coincidence. They were interested in sailing to the United States so they could do some touring in the United States, and we were interested in coming home. And we met on the cruise and had a great time dining with them every night and enjoying their company. So we had a nice foursome to eat at all these restaurants. And each of the specialty restaurants on this ship, even though it was a 1,200-passenger ship, held about 100 people, which is very large for 100-passenger eateries, in addition to the main dining room, which was huge, and the buffet. So we found that this ship had no lines, which is really amazing and something we really appreciate. We could go to the dining room anytime we wanted to and have a nice meal. If we have a reservation at the specialty restaurants, we would go there and there would be no line, of course. But no matter where we went and what we were doing, there was virtually no lines, which is a big plus when you're on a ship of any size, and you're always something you worry about.
When you're on vacation, you don't want to stand in line, plain and simple.
And I think one of the other things that we were very surprised at was is that one of our members had a specialized diet. We were constantly amazed at how accommodating the cruise line was.
And conscientious they were.
And conscientious. She would make her menu selections prior to us arriving at the dining room. And in every case, the dining room was ready. They had made special rolls to go along with it, gluten-free. And everything she wanted was right there. They had special desserts. And they were very conscientious about what her dining requirements were.
And so if you have any sort of health problems that require special eating, we would strongly recommend this line for how well they handled that.
Yes. And the ship was just very well run. The crew was extremely friendly. Everything worked in our cabin. We had a very nice cabin, even though it was not an upper-class cabin. It was just the usual
veranda. They put some excellent speakers on board.
Yes.
Who gave frequent, kind of made me feel like I was back in college again. But interesting stuff, not boring stuff.
They had three very...
Some of it was about where we had just been, where we are going. Some of it was about things that interested them. Very thought-provoking and stimulating. So they were very well done. And I know they had bridge lessons. They often put a bridge teacher on board.
Right.
So they had a person for that.
I think two, really.
One of our friends really enjoyed the arts and crafts program.
Uh-huh.
She was astonished how much they spent on the materials that they gave her to do her arts and crafts. That was very impressive as well.
So if you're looking at a repositioning cruise, as usual, they have lots of extra activities for those days at sea. We had an extra day at sea because when you are traveling in the shoulder season, which is what the repositioning cruises are, they're always in the spring and fall, so that when you're traveling in the shoulder season, you're going to have a likelihood of some bad weather. And we had to skip one of the Japanese ports because of bad weather. We couldn't get in to dock. So this is always an issue. And as a matter of fact, this shoulder season and this particular 20-day cruise was a real test of the ship because...
This ship was made for people who want to lay out alongside the pool and bask in the sun. And we did not see the sun once we left Japan until we came to Seattle, and it wasn't very sunny there either.
And not only that, but we didn't see the sun, but it was also very chilly.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
So for a ship that's designed for warm weather, in other words, the pool area is open. And it has no shelter, really, other than the sides of the ship. So ships like that are called warm weather ships. And if it has a cover that mechanically covers up the pool area so that it can be used in cold weather because they can heat it. It does obviously block the sun, but it makes the pool area available. So this ship was a warm weather ship, and that meant that everybody had to be inside, which is a testament to this ship because, once again, we didn't feel that it was overly crowded. The lines and things waiting for the limited facilities inside were not... we were impressed, so we like Oceania.
We will go on them again, and they sail all around the world, so yeah. We'll find some place, I'm sure.
So, Alaska.
It was cold and wet, as we expected it to be. It's the very beginning of their season as well, but we stopped at islands because we were on a ship, which had no repetition to what we did last summer.
We spent 85 days there, and we didn't duplicate anything.
Alaska.
Can you believe that? 85 days there last summer, and I'm sure you followed that on the RV Navigator, our long RV trip last summer. But we were back to Alaska, and it was exciting because we didn't go to any place that we went last summer. As a matter of fact, there were a couple of new ports that we had never been to at all. Alaska is a big place and has a lot of very small towns that are actually all pretty much the same.
And the time of year that we just went, it's iffy because a lot of the best activities to do are outside activities, animal viewing, bike riding, kayaking. And when there's a high of 45 degrees with a chance of rain, those activities are less fun, let's put it that way. You have to be a very hardy person to do that stuff in that weather.
We were very glad that we had our puffies and we had hats and gloves. Our friends from Australia
went out and bought a little more. Because they're not used to weather quite this nippy.
And they had to buy gloves. They didn't own a pair of gloves.
Well, they don't need them where they live.
I know.
Which is kind of nice.
Yeah, boy, that would be really nice. Well, I suppose in Florida you wouldn't. I don't know. It's just strange not to have gloves. But we had our gloves and our puffies and our boots and everything. So we were pretty much prepared. But we did have some snow. And it was cold and rainy. And as she says, for 20 days we didn't see the sun.
The other risk you might encounter, which didn't happen to us this time, is that when you're at the shoulder season, some of the attractions may not have opened yet or may no longer be open if you're doing them in the fall. So for the reduced price, you might have some reduced choices in terms of activities or things to see and do. Something else I didn't really talk about while we talked about Japan that I wanted to say, after a while, the temples, which are spectacularly beautiful, got kind of boring in their sameness.
Yes.
And I would guess a Japanese person who came to Rome and saw 14 Catholic churches in one day might feel the same way. But as picturesque as they were and the fun we had watching the people worship, which mostly involved wishing for things, especially prosperity and financial benefits, which was kind of weird to somebody who was raised in the Catholic mindset, I guess. They got to be tedious to us. So be aware of that. And the more you know about Buddhism and Shintoism before you go, probably the more you will get out of what you are seeing.
One of our cultural experiences was visiting
a monk. He tried to explain to us his way of life and his approach to life, and then we even tried to meditate a little at the end of this encounter.
Yeah.
There are people, many Americans do that, but we don't. And for us, it was a bit of a...
And I was a bit surprised that some people found that to be the highlight of the trip.
Yeah, we're not necessarily typical.
So I'm just not into meditation. Back to the cruise. Anyway, so... we then got off the ship in Seattle and a couple days ago.
In a few short hours, here we were.
Yep, back to home. And we're going to be here for a while because...
We had a nice trip planned in the fall. another trip with a cruise, what a surprise, in the Iceland, Greenland, Arctic Canada sort of vicinity. We're really looking forward to that. And during the winter, I don't know if we've mentioned this or not, my shoulder really started acting up. I've been in incredible pain. It's constant. It interferes with my sleep. While we were in Florida, I didn't want to get anything started with a serious medical doctor because my doctors are up here in Illinois. So I went to a chiropractor, which was a cultural experience of itself. But it was very clear to me that I needed to do something about this because it was getting intolerable. I can't ride my bike. I can't play tennis. I can't swim. I can't play. You get the idea.
Carry groceries.
I planned this out very carefully. I bet you're not surprised to hear that. And got an appointment with a surgeon, highly recommended.
Before we left.
During the brief week that we were at home between being in Florida and leaving again, and I had arranged a surgical date with him that would work out just fine and that I would be in good enough shape if all went properly that we could continue with this Iceland trip. And you would keep hearing about Wiseman Adventures. However, our insurance company rejected...
What was that again?
I want to keep it clean. Denied my surgery. And so all of a sudden we found ourselves ready to pay the bill for our fall adventure or not go altogether. And since we couldn't be sure that we could go, because if I couldn't have the surgery, they were saying I needed 6 weeks of physical therapy first, totally threw off the schedule. So... I'm still having the surgery pretty soon. I'm sure you will hear some blah, 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 blah next month when we talk to you, if indeed I'm coherent enough to do that. And we are going to be here for quite a while unless something interesting pops up last minute or we might decide to take the motorhome out for a spin.
Of course.
We have not done much of that lately. So who knows? We cannot promise you exactly what's going to happen, but we're not going to Arctic Canada.
And RVing is definitely going to be on our list, but... Everybody takes pictures during their travel experiences. And, of course, the iPhone has become – well, the phone has become a essential tool for most people as they document their travel adventures. The kind of camera that I carry has become less and less popular, and everybody uses their phone, and then you share the pictures with each other as you go along. But, of course, there are times when your pictures don't turn out quite the way you want them to. Or, in my case, because I'm doing kind of a slideshow – I needed a logo, and in the past, I've made the logo for the opening of the slideshow, you know, kind of a slide that is a summary of all of the stops and things. Oh, it's tedious. And I started using ChatGPT. If you take a look at our website, which is kind of what I was referring to at the beginning, I have the latest logo for the slideshow that I'm going to be doing. And how long did it take me to make this? About 30 seconds.
Yeah, so fast.
And it is very nice looking. So in ChatGPT, you type in a prompt, and that is words that describe the outcome.
And your outcome is better if you use the words that the AI can understand and match what it is you have in your mind. So there is some degree of learning to properly express the thoughts
yes.
that are in your head.
But it doesn't take long to learn this sort of stuff.
And if you don't like the outcome, you can just change a few words and redo it. Another 30 seconds.
And it takes just seconds. And if you take a look at this logo, I put in all of the destinations that we went. I put in Shinkansen. I put in Oat Travel and then the name of the trip. And when it came out, I was just like, whoa. And it put in all the pictures. Those are not my pictures that I put in. I didn't put in any pictures. It just went off to the web and found pictures of all the destinations that we were going to, and it came back with a great logo, which is just amazing.
Should we give some credit to somebody who helped you think of this?
Well, of course, but we have to talk about his next step. Our friend Al told me about this, and I was very excited to find it out. But then... he took it to the next level.
Cheater, cheater.
Oh! We went to a lot of destinations, and they were in Japan prior to our arrival. And did they see Mount Fuji?
They said they did.
Yes, kind of. But when he said to ChatGPT, we want just Mount Fuji behind us and instead of all the forest. and Mount Fuji was now prominently displayed behind them in the picture that you see. So he took a lot of his pictures and allowed Jet to
spruce them up a bit.
Spruce them up a bit. And that's amazing also that the two pictures that I have there, they're standing in front of a sign for Mount Fuji. And then the next picture, it looks like they're really close and have a great view of Mount Fuji. But that one is created by ChatGPT after a quick prompt, change the background. And he has a number of these pictures. And how ethical is this? And I don't know. I didn't do any of that.
I'm sitting here listening to you talk, and I'm wondering how many of our younger listeners already know this and do this.
I would like to hear from you guys about whether this is ethical or whether you can you post pictures on your website or on Facebook that are not real? Why bother to even go there?
Yeah, right. I'll do my trip to Iceland whether I go or not. We'll put up pictures.
We'll put up pictures and you won't know. I don't know. That just
my arm in a sling and there we are on a glacier.
But you can't tell. No. I mean, making the logo was obviously that what it was created. I mean, there's no question that that's not a picture. But when you show and post pictures that are not pictures, although Al always says that he puts a little disclaimer on there, but is everybody going to be that honest?
No.
I don't know.
No.
But you need to try this. And the cool part about it is that it's free.
It was fun. It's free.
It's fun, fast.
Often you have a vision of what you want to share with the folks back home that didn't quite end up what your camera took, and you can make it match your vision.
Yeah, and I mean, this is just unbelievable, really. We'll let you decide whether you want to be fair and honest or whether you want to be slightly sneaky.
And it's really a reminder to me, I already knew this, when I see photographs now, I assume that they are not real until I have evidence that shows me that they are.
Yeah.
I think that's a better posture for me to take. Too easily sucked in by cute animal pictures doing things that animal would never do or whatever. It's a real fooler.
And this month you're going to want to look at our calendar picture. You know, every month when you click on the RV Navigator homepage, you'll see at the top there's a tab for calendar, and that is the wallpaper for this month. And this month features a nice picture of a lake with Mount Fuji behind it.
Were you really there?
We'll let our listeners guess. Is that a real picture?
Was it really a blue sky day? Was there really a lake?
Was Mount Fuji sticking up behind the forest? Stay tuned, and we will give you the full information next month. But with that said, AI-generated photos are a problem because some people are not very honest about this. And we have this article that you can click on in the links for this month's episode. New York City Gallery sold an AI-generated Ansel Adams photo without permission. They had taken AI. They had
colorized it.
And of course, Ansel Adams' pictures
are always black and white.
Always black and white. And they're very iconic. Everybody has seen the Ansel Adams pictures. So you know right away, you say, well, I've seen that picture. And Ansel Adams' pictures are never in color. And for this gallery to sell.
Call the police.
They did. His estate is suing the gallery for selling this. I just can't imagine that this is obviously very blatant, but you say, wait a minute, if that can happen to them, then you've got to be very careful about buying pictures. All right. And these were selling for thousands. I mean, this was not just bucks. So where have you been this year?
Japan.
The average person, I'm going to put a photo of a list of places, 30 of them. The average person has been to 5 of these places. How many have you visited?
Me?
Yeah.
All of them.
Oh.
I think.
I've been to all but one.
Oh, which one weren't you at?
Mount Fuji is on there.
Uh-huh.
Have we been to Mount Fuji?
It's a must-see. Okay. We saw it.
There was one I haven't been to.
Oh, I'm looking at it.
Angkor Wat, the Great Wall of China.
Oh, yeah. We were not ever at the Great Wall. That's a must-see, too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've been to all the others, but not to the Great Wall of China. So, dear listener, take a look at this list and see how many you've been to.
And make some goals. It's good
make
to have goals.
Right. Of course, we do want to talk a little bit about some of the details of the RV world this month. Big changes at Starlink. They have decided to increase their prices. They're still launching lots of satellites from
Florida. What a surprise.
Whoa. Standby has gone from $5 to $10, which has generated a lot of negative traffic. I mean, that yes, that's a 100% increase, but $10 a month for 0.5 megabit per second service, which is not bad. As an old-timer, let me tell you old-time stories.
Back in the day.
When I had my modem and I got 256 kilobits per second.
And you were thrilled.
And I was thrilled. And now this is 512, which is double that speed. I would have been ecstatically happy with this speed. And this is unlimited for $10 a month. I've paid a lot more for a lot less. You know, that was in the days when the modem went and you could hear it. And if those sounds don't sound familiar to you, then you are young.
At least we think you are.
Yes, from our perspective. They've also increased the prices of several of the plans by about $10 a month. So everything has gone up. But at the same time, they have a brand new plan, which I think is something that we would definitely consider. 300 gigabytes for $80 a month. And that's a very reasonable amount of data. I mean, that's a huge amount of data.
You can stream movies every day.
I don't know about that. But
not every
it's
day?
Certainly, I would guess that we use more than that at home when we stream.
See, I'm out of touch. You just don't even think about
it. Well, and most of the time you don't have any
reason to
any way
to
know. I mean,
limited.
You have to go back and look at your statistics to see actually how much data you're using. But we probably use more than that, as do most families. I mean, you know, you don't really think about it. But if you're on the road and you're not full-time watching TV, as we might do at home, then 300 gigabytes probably would be a reasonable amount. And that's half of what we used to pay.
And if you go over that, as you might, because
you'd have to kick into the unlimited plan, which you can do anytime during the month.
Oh, you can't pay like for another gigabytes a month?
They don't seem to do that anymore. Uh-huh. And that means that you would kick it up to $175 a month.
Hmm.
So for totally unlimited, which is what we've had in the past, it was $165 and now it's gone up to $175. It's interesting that in Australia, where our friends have Starlink also, that theirs are limited by speed, not necessarily by data.
So how do you keep track during the month if you're afraid you're going to go over? How do you monitor
that? Well, you have to look at the app. I mean, you have to monitor it. But
so you can't.
I don't bother to because we're on unlimited, so it's going to get
once a week you could check it if you were on the road to see if you were going to go over.
Okay, so have you been to all of the national parks, the 10 most visited national parks?
I'm afraid to say yes, but I think I have been to the 10 most visited. And one thing I should say, especially about the Smoky Mountains, it's number one in the most visited because it's located so near where so many people live.
Yeah, but how about number two?
Zion? That's pretty near where a lot of people live.
No, it's in the middle of Utah. Nobody lives there.
I was talking about the Smokies.
I know, but I mean, that's number one, good. 11.5 million visitors, wow. Whereas Zion has only 4.9, so less than half. So Smoky Mountain is ahead by a major amount. Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, Yosemite,
again,
Rocky Mountain National,
Acadia,
which is in Maine, that's
4 million,
huh?
And usually you go to the Tetons when you go to Yellowstone. They're almost twins to me.
Uh-huh. Olympic and Glacier in Montana. Those are the top 10. Where are most of the least visited national parks?
Very far away from population in Alaska.
Alaska. And how many of those have we visited?
Four of the 10.
You can look at this site on our website and decide for yourself which parks you want to go to. If you want to go to some lightly visited parks, then you might want to take a look at this list.
And, of course, you need to keep an eye on the news these days if you're going to go to the more popular ones because they are trying very hard to cope with the excessive love they are getting these days and their various population control measures that have been put in place and taken down again because it's hard to manage the huge crowds and you definitely don't get a pristine outdoorsy experience when you have to stand in line for an hour before you can get into a park.
You have to reserve in advance and stand in line. I don't know if we'll ever visit another popular national park. Don't see it as happening. For if you haven't been there, you got to go sometime.
The parks need to be given more money so they can build more facilities handle that better, because they've really been suffering these days.
And there are a lot of other parks that are less popular that are still spectacular.
That aren't in Alaska.
Yeah, we see pictures all the time. Uh-oh. But are the pictures real?
I'm going to assume they are not real until I see evidence to the contrary.
And if you see the pictures that I take, then you know that they are all real, because the pictures I don't use.
But you might have enhanced them.
Well, I don't see that as bad.
It's semi-real.
Talk about enhanced pictures. I remember having our senior pictures taken back in high school, and they had retouching done.
They took the pimples out.
They took the blemishes off your face, and they did it with an airbrush. So pictures have been adjusted for a long time.
I'm thinking of the pictures that I took in Japan, especially at the temples, and some of them I had to take the people out, or you would hardly see the temple. There were
so many
people there.
So you use AI for...
I use some enhancing also, yes. I'm a reluctant convert.
And that's built right into the software.
Right.
The Apple software.
Easy to do.
So this is really, oh boy. This is a can of worms.
Where's the line?
So, dear listener, where do you stand on altering your pictures? Do you take out the relatives that were no longer popular out of your Christmas pictures?
After the divorce, some of them are just gone.
Yeah. Do you slice spaces out between the pictures, between the topics
people
in the pictures, so that they're closer together? Well, I think AI could do any of that. And to make it so easy and free is just taking it to the next level, I think. It always has been possible, but you had to be kind of a...
highly skilled.
I had to be somebody who was skilled. Anyway, so we will turn it over to next month, and we appreciate you listening, and we would hope that you would keep in touch. Please take a look at the website and look at the pictures and see what you think about what we have talked about today.
And send me some healing thoughts so that I won't be bitching and moaning about how much I am in distress, and I can rave about how much better I feel.
And next month you'll see her in a sling. We'll have a picture.
I might be out of it by then.
Really?
Yeah, 3 weeks they said maybe.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is
3 weeks in a sling.
This is different than the rotator cuff surgery I had before.
Okay.
We'll see.
So now we've got two shoulders and a knee that have been fixed.
And an ankle.
So we only have one
big joint,
one knee and one ankle to go.
Number four. I'm going to be the bionic woman when this is all over.
Okay. Is it a problem going through the airport?
Yes. I just point at my knee, and then they send me to that scanner thing where you have to put your arms up. Even when you can't talk to the people because you're in an airport with somewhere else in the world. It's not a problem.
Okay. So I haven't had that issue. So you will have even more metal in your body after next month. Dear listener, wish Martha happy surgery and
recovery.
And happy birthday, too.
Oh, yes.
Which will be happening next month. Oh. So,
busy
month here in Illinois. We will be here for a while. We appreciate you listening, and we will see you in a campground.
Don't you have a reservation?
I do, for Indiana, for July sometime.
July, yeah.
So
we'll talk about that next month.
Okay, we will be hopefully in the RV in the not-too-distant future and seeing you on the road.
Hope you have a chance to enjoy the summer outdoors in your RV or tent, however it is that you camp. And we wish you a good vacation. Talk to you again.
Bye now.